listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to Football in Europe. I'm your host, Rob Daly. We're back for your weekly European football podcast as we head into the last few weeks of the club football season on the continent. With me is Chris Parrott. Chris, what are we talking about this week?
Well, it was a blockbuster of a weekend, Rob. Some of the biggest games across Europe. The Madrid derby. Barcelona had a meltdown in Malaga. Zenit have finally moved to a sparkling new home. There's chaos at Stauer. Bayern conquered Dortmund in their Clásica. And Cologne's Anthony Modeste has his very own rap, which we'll hear later in the show.
OK, we'll talk about all that later. And we'll be hearing from Romanian journalist Emmanuel Roșu, who writes for World Soccer and appears on other things. He's been telling us exactly about the naming crisis that's happening in Steaua. Chris, we've been away for a week. Both of us were very busy. You were moving house last Monday.
Yes.
So we couldn't do the show. But we did have a competition where we were giving away a copy of the new book by Andrew Downey, who appeared on the show recently, about Socrates. And of all the many, many people who entered the competition, we've randomly selected a winner. And who's getting that book, Chris?
Ready for the drum roll? Richard Wyatt.
Well done, Richard Wyatt. You have won a copy of Socrates, the book by Andrew Downey. We'll be sending that to you. And thank you to everyone who entered the competition. And a big thanks to Andrew himself for appearing on the show very recently to talk about the Brazilian and political legend that was Socrates. Chris, let's talk about the Madrid derby, first of all. It finished Real Madrid 1, Atletico 1. Antoine Griezmann with an equaliser, a fine counter-attack from Atletico after Real Madrid had taken the lead through a Pepe header. Jonathan Stephen actually saying on Twitter, Real score a header from a corner, Atletico score a lovely move. What's going on? And I think he's being quite sarcastic there because this is what we've come to expect from these two teams. An entertaining game and some notable defending from Atletico as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And ultimately, Atletico happier with the points, I suppose. But then again, because as we'll talk about in a moment with Barcelona, it ended up not being a bad weekend for Real Madrid, despite the fact they didn't beat their city neighbours at home. It was a really good game. Stefan Savic with one of the best defensive clearances of the season, I think. This guy who, you know, wasn't great at Manchester City earlier on, albeit very young in his career, but Diego Simeone trusts him. It was an unbelievable clearance. Then Pepe, as you mentioned, with the opening goal, but Griezmann just with such a cool finish late on in the game. And maybe the bigger news ultimately was Pepe's injury. Broken a couple of ribs after a clash with a teammate. It looked so painful. And yes, all the histrionics of Pepe, he is an extremely good defender. And he will be missing maybe for up to a month, so probably both legs of Real Madrid's quarterfinal with Bayern. And potentially some key games in La Liga as well.
What's interesting for me, Chris, the day after the derby, was looking at the Madrid-based papers, and we're talking about like Marca and AS as well. But both of those papers, despite having an intercity derby, did not lead with the fact that it finished 1-1 between Real Madrid and Atletico. More of the focus, certainly from Marca, they ran with the headline, Michel puts La Liga on a plate, in reference to the fact that his side, Malaga, got a 2-0 win against Barcelona. Barcelona missing a big opportunity to I think, go level on points with Real Madrid at the top.
Yeah, absolutely, which is why I mentioned, OK, you know, Real Madrid not winning at home is normally the headline. But ultimately, it was a good weekend because that was one of their key tests between now and the end of the season. And they didn't lose any ground on anybody because, OK, Atletico got a point against them. But then, you know, Barcelona were beaten quite comfortably against Malaga. It was a game full of incident, full of controversy. But also their defending was really poor. You know, we saw them ship 4 against Paris Saint-Germain, didn't we? And they don't look good enough defensively, I don't think, to win the Champions League. But they also lost Neymar, who was sent off for 2 bookable offences, and maybe he wasn't very happy. It's the first time he's been sent off in his La Liga career. The first one was a really silly yellow card, and the second one was for clattering into Diego Llorente. And then suffice to say, he wasn't very happy. He then sarcastically applauded the decision as he was making his way off the pitch, which could mean that he might get an extended ban. And if they do increase it from 1 to 2 games, he would then miss the Clásico.
I think Jesús Gil Manzano, who was the referee for the game, absolutely got the Neymar sending off completely right. He did miss a penalty. Barcelona should have had a spot kick when Sergio Roberto was brought down. I saw most of this game after work on Saturday, and I felt Barcelona were especially flat. I mean, neither Barcelona or Real Madrid in La Liga have been great. I mean, Charlie's tweeted in, say, the depth of the squad and Luis Enrique's failure to start with a strong team cost Barca at the weekend. There's been some criticism of Zidane from Real Madrid supporters as well. I mean, Enrique's on his way out. It doesn't seem, you know, anyone's especially happy with their manager at the moment, despite the fact that Real Madrid and Barcelona are the top two teams in Spain.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't think it's been a vintage Barca or Real Madrid season, but one of them could still end up winning a rather big double in terms of La Liga and the Champions League, couldn't they? Yeah, I think the referee got it absolutely spot on. It was, you know, Neymar was tying his shoelaces, but it was clearly he was clearly disrupting the free kick, and the second yellow card was a silly challenge by the time you're on a yellow.
Agree, yeah.
And, you know, I know Barcelona this season have felt domestically that they have not had the rub of the green with officials, and I think every decision, once you're in that mindset, becomes worse and worse. You know, they got a rather nice one against Paris Saint-Germain, didn't they? Otherwise, they wouldn't be in the Champions League. So, you know, that's being a bit flippant. But I think Barcelona over the last 10, 20 years probably can't complain too much about refereeing decisions in terms of, I'm sure they've got some big club biased as well. But yeah, I just thought they were so open defensively. You know, you look at the two goals. I know the second one, they were chasing the game. But, you know, that isn't... It didn't look like a real top team, I didn't think. And Malaga loved beating them. And Sandro got the first, and lovely quote from him. He left Barcelona in the summer. He said, "I apologise not to Barcelona fans, but to the people at La Masia who gave me everything." So, yeah, one of Barcelona's own helped with their downfall. But what it does mean is that I think the title race is going to go to the wire. And certainly that Clásico is going to be huge.
Monchi, the sporting director or director of sport, whatever you want to call him, at Sevilla, said his goodbye at the weekend. Now, Chris, he's widely regarded, for people who don't know who Monchi is, as maybe one of the transfer gurus in world football. He's going to be a big loss to Sevilla. For example, he signed Dani Alves for 1.5 billion euros, sold him for 40. Julio Baptista for 3, sold him for 25. Sadio Keita for 4, sold him for 17. I think ultimately he's made a 200 million euro profit since he's been in that position at Sevilla. Mm. And he's been with the club for some time, not just as in the background, but also as a player as well. He's going to be a big loss. And they said goodbye to him at the weekend in their 4-2 win over Deportivo.
Yeah, they did. 17 years he's been there. Nearly signed Van Persie and Marcelo, apparently. And you mentioned the financial profit. Remember, during his time, they've also won 4 European trophies and have become a force in Spain as well. So it's not just the finances. He's also built winning teams whilst doing that, which is the perfect match. And by all accounts, moving to Roma, which is a sign of just how ambitious they are. And there's those rumours. You wonder whether Luis Enrique might end up back there. I don't know. He's going to have a year off, but Roma have huge plans. And if they can get Monchi, you know, that would be a serious statement, I think. But yeah, he walked out with all the trophies on the pitch. And from his point of view, it was a very emotional time. He wore a replica shirt of Antonio Pueta, who, of course, tragically passed away, the Sevilla player. So it was an emotional day. But from Monchi's point of view, leaving Sevilla, many have tried to poach him, but he is finally on the move. And whoever gets him, if it is Roma, they're going to get a guy with a huge pedigree and certainly a wonderful reputation.
Yeah, apparently he hasn't wanted to confirm the deal to Roma yet because he didn't want to disrupt Sevilla, who since the especially the first leg even against Leicester City in the Champions League have struggled. Mm. And of course they did come close to winning La Liga in 2007 under his guidance. And Chris, he's sort of... I mean, he signed some exceptional players. And he's sort of done this sort of dream team of players that he signed during his time. Now, it isn't a list of stellar names, but it's a list of players who did exceptionally well at Sevilla, and some of them you'd even argue perhaps overachieved.
Yeah, so the great thing about it is that, A, he did it. I mean, B, what an interview to be able to be asked, OK, mate, who's your 11 best signings? You know, it certainly massages the ego. But I also like the fact that it's a proper team. He's picked a formation. He's even picked a right-sided centre-half and a left-sided centre-half. So this is his 11, if you like, of his best signings since he's been at Sevilla. Goalkeeper Andreas Palop, who was their hero in the UEFA Cup 2007. He scored a goal, actually, en route to the final, amazingly. I think in the last 16, and then was the penalty hero at Hampden Park when they beat Espanyol. Right back, Dani Alves, no introduction. Right-sided centre-half, Javi Navarro. Left-sided centre-half, Julian Escudé. Left-back, Adriano. Defensive midfield, Christian Poulsen. Two central midfielders, Renato and Ivan Rakitic. Attacking midfielder is Eva Benega. And then the centre-forwards, Luis Fabiano and Frederic Canute, who Premier League fans will remember. And I didn't realise this, Rob. 136 goals in 290 appearances Canute scored at Sevilla. That is a phenomenal
record. Not bad. And not bad team as well there for Monchi, who will look to, with American ownership at Roma, try and guide them to success and a real challenge for Juventus, who, Chris, it would appear, are en route to becoming Italian champions once again. They beat Chievo at the weekend. Two more goals for Gonzalo Higuain, who has 57 now in 66 Serie A appearances. And a good result for them off the back of a week when Juve secured their place in the Coppa Italia final.
Yeah, a brilliant week for them and for Gonzalo Higuain, who, given that we didn't have the podcast last week, Coppa Italia semi-final, he scored in Naples. Having not scored in the league match there, he got a couple and actually then broke his silence, interestingly, on his move away from Naples and how, you know, it was one of the transfers in Italian football history. Juve came in and said, we'll meet his frankly, almost ridiculous release clause. And we've heard a lot from De Laurentiis, the Napoli owner, and Higuain finally hit back, if you like, because De Laurentiis has been pretty derogatory, in all honesty. And he says, it was him who pushed me into making the decision. I'd like to thank the fans and my teammates, but not De Laurentiis. I no longer had a relationship with him. I couldn't stand another minute with him.
Excellent. So Juve win. And they are only 6 points clear, in fairness, of Roma. We have 7 games to go in Italy. Roma are picking up a 3-0 win at Bologna at the weekend. Unsurprisingly, Edin Dzeko, one of the scorers there. So Roma stay within touching distance of Juve, and Roma will host them on the 14th of May, 2 games after that. AC Milan, well, De La Feu might be going back to Barcelona if reports are to be believed. He's found his form again and scored in Milan's 4-0 win over Palermo. And Napoli won 3-0 at Lazio. Sensational result. 2 goals from Insigne. Mm. Chris, there was one other thing I wanted to point out about Juventus, and that is that Giorgio Chiellini, I don't know if you saw this, picked up a business degree during the week.
I did.
The Italian international has got a degree on international context from the University of Turin. He did his report on Juventus. and their status in the international market. And the 32-year-old was presented with his certificate on Thursday. Apparently, he got top marks.
Hang on. Would you dare, if you are the lecturer, would you dare not give Giorgio Chiellini top marks? I'm not saying that he didn't deserve it, but can you imagine? Unfortunately, Giorgio, that's a 39. You haven't passed.
What, through fear or because you're going to have to deal with angry Juventus fans who might try and persuade you to give him an A.
Well, just because
I first.
Yeah, an A. So are we back at GCSE? no, well, just because it's Chiellini. You'd love to teach him. But, I mean, it is, yeah, fascinating, isn't it? He's an intelligent bloke and he's one of the greatest defenders of his generation didn't play, interestingly. Well, Bonucci and Chiellini both started, at least, on the bench for that win for Juventus against Chievo with Barcelona in mind. Would you like a Ruben from Italy, Rob? I've got a Ruben for you.
Sure, yeah, let's have it.
So I'm going to go back slightly again to Juve's win against Napoli in the Coppa Italia semi-final. So Dries Mertens came on, and I don't know if you saw this. He came on, sprinted from the halfway line to the penalty area, and then seized on a mistake and with his very first touch scored. It was one of the great substitute goals. Just literally, okay, run as fast as you can and then finish it. And he did, after a bit of some dreadful goalkeeping. So I thought I'd see what the quickest substitute goal of all time was. Now, very hard to find across the globe, so in the end I just took the Premier League, and it is Lord Nicholas Bentner, would you believe? He scored in a North London derby for Arsenal against Tottenham after 6 seconds. 6 seconds after coming on.
I don't remember that at all.
I'm sure he does.
He's probably got 6 seconds tattooed on his leg somewhere. Hey, Chris, let's quickly talk about, before we talk about Steaua Bucharest, and we're going to get onto the Bundesliga later on, of course, after Bayern beat Dortmund this weekend. Zenit are moving to their new ground at last, because at the weekend they played their final game at the Petrovsky, an iconic stadium on the water in St. Petersburg. It finished 1-1 against Angie, a disappointing end to their era there, in essence, but there was a minute silence to remember the victims of last Monday's terrorist attack, of course, in the city of St. Petersburg. Zenit have had to wait, haven't they, Chris, for this stadium, which will be used for the World Cup?
A long, long time, Rob. And it all came about fairly quickly. It was announced on Twitter, actually. Zenit said, "We've got some news for you." And then about an hour later said, "This weekend's match will be the last at the Petrovsky." We're moving, finally. After their new stadium was given the green light by RFU and UEFA that they could play home games there. It's located not too far away on the Krzysztofski Island. It's almost 70,000. It looks amazing. It really does. It's going to host the Confederations Cup. And then it's going to host, obviously, next year's World Cup. It's a brilliant arena. But yeah, goodbye to the Petrovsky. Do you remember when I spoke about Antia? The guy who's in charge there, he's done an amazing job with this. He took over in January. They sold all their squad, signed a whole new one. And he's got a 1-1 draw away at Zenit. And it was emotional. The fans stayed quiet, actually, for the first 14 minutes in honour of all those that lost their lives. And then a round of applause. And Zenit also went on the St. Petersburg Metro last week as well and laid some flowers. So football uniting there. But yeah, in terms of Zenit, goodbye to the Petrovsky and those fantastic floodlights. But hello to what will be one of the best state-of-the-art stadiums in the whole of Europe.
Given the nature of that result, the 1-1 draw with Angie, have they said goodbye to the Russian Premier League as well? Are Spartak going to win it, Chris?
I think they will. It was a brilliant week for Spartak in the end. I commentated on them a week ago against Orenburg. They threw away a two-goal lead, and then Quincy Promes came up with a last-minute winner. And just the whole Massimo Carreras, they just utterly believe in each other for a club that has had so much infighting. And then this weekend was brilliant for Spartak. They won away at Ufa. Zenit drew, as we mentioned, and CSKA failed to win as well. So they're 9 points clear with 8 to play. Spartak host Zenit this weekend. And if Zenit don't win that game, then I think they're out of it. I don't think CSKA will mount the challenge. And I think for the first time in 16 years, Spartak will win the Russian Premier League.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Let's turn our attention now to what's happening at Steaua Bucharest. If you haven't been following this, the club that won the 1986 European Cup have been told, or being told, essentially, that they can't be known as Steaua Bucharest anymore. It's in a dispute with the country's Ministry of Defence, who say they hold the naming rights to Steaua. And it's become a very bitter public dispute involving Steaua's eccentric owner Gigi Becali. So earlier on, I caught up with world soccer journalist Emmanuel Roșu to discuss exactly what's happening in Bucharest.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
Emmanuel Roșu, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
We've brought you on to talk about Steaua Bucharest and what's happening at the club that is currently not known as Steaua Bucharest. First of all, can we talk about the owner, Gigi Becali? For our listeners, can you just explain who he is?
Multimillionaire in Romania. Some say he's the richest guy, the richest man in the country. Took power at Steaua in 2003, full power, full control of the club. He just became famous. Became rich after the year 2000 and wanted to become famous. That's the logical consequence of things. That's how he his future. He wanted to become rich, then he wanted to become famous, and then he wanted to become president. He ran for presidency in Romania. He didn't have much success, but he became very popular thanks to Steaua and thanks to the things he did with the football club, because Steaua reached new heights, UEFA Cup semi-final, they reached the Champions League group stage, things that weren't common before he came to power. He made his money thanks to various land deals. He's a real estate guru who became rich after the fall of the communism, and I think that he represents that part of the society. He's the man that went from being a shepherd to become a multimillionaire. But at some point, he did own it, and he could do whatever he wanted with one of the most important sports clubs. Judging by the trophies, it's the most important sports club in Romania.
Okay, so we go back to 1986 and the club won the European Cup, which is presumably the highest point of Steaua's life to date. But it would appear that the club he currently owns, is no longer going to be called Steaua. Explain why we have this fight over the club name.
Oh man, it's never ending. This war started 5 or 6 years ago. People, journalists, fans, normal fans, lawyers, cannot fully understand what's happening with this club. At this moment, the club is named FCFCSB because Becali decided to apply for a name change in order to avoid having problems with the European license for next season. Concerning the trophy record, that's a big question because at the moment, we don't know. There's not a final court decision rule. If Becali's club does hold the trophy record, or if it's just after 2003 when he came to power. He just says that and that he will get back to the Steaua name once things are okay from the legal point of view. Many people saying that he will never get the Steaua brand back. It drew a lot of attention nationwide and European-wise as well. People from all around the world are asking questions. They want to know what's happening. And honestly, we don't know exactly what to tell them, because this is so complicated. This takeover has so many questions around it. It's very sensitive.
Okay, so they're hoping for a court decision later this year, and the fight is obviously with the Ministry of Defence, who essentially the team was a Ministry of Defence team, as many, I suppose, many sports club in ex-communist countries were. This is a very common thing, even if we look at Russia. Obviously, a lot of the clubs there are associated with the army or with the rail service and this kind of thing. What also is interests me about Becali, who appears to be this quite eccentric character who said unfavourable things about women and gay people as well, I believe, is that didn't he at one point flirt with the idea of renaming the club after himself?
That was more of a joke from him. Some lawyers advised him not to name the club CSB. Army even threatened to sue him again because FCSB obviously comes from FC Steaua Bucharest. So the army wants to get the FCSB back as well. They don't think FCSB is different enough from Steaua. So they wanted the FCSB back, and they might sue in the future. We don't know, because they could sue him again and take the FCSB out as well.
From what I've been reading, there is now a new Steaua Bucharest, a club that they think will start perhaps in the lower tiers of Romanian football. So will they be the club associated with that 1986 European Cup success?
The army says so, that they have the trophy record, but it's not final yet. because the Army says they do have the 1986 trophy in their trophy records, and Becali says the same thing. UEFA sees Becali's team, FCSB, as the continuator of the Steaua, glorious Steaua club from the communist era.
Is this seen as an embarrassing public fight between the Army and Becali's club at the moment? People see this as a, you know, the fact this is playing out publicly, it's been in the, I think it was in the New York Times this week. Is it seen as an embarrassment to the Steaua brand and even perhaps to the Romanian government?
The government didn't take it as seriously as it should. They realized that this could lead to something which cannot be repaired in the future. Because if this new Steaua team formed by the Army will start playing in the summer, I see it kind of hard to settle things with a decision by the Ministry of Defense or with a signed paper that would state, okay, this Steaua and that's not Steaua. It's going to create even much confusion. One thing for certain, that that club belonging to the Army will start life in the fourth of the year, starting this summer. They named the manager. They are scouting for players in the lower leagues. And they definitely want to play in the first league by 2020, when a brand new stadium will appear on the site of the historical Ghencea ground, where all the European success came in the 80s.
And how do some of the iconic players from Steaua's history feel? I mean, obviously, the likes of Gheorghe Hagi have played for Steaua. Have many spoken about their opinion on the dispute and whether Becali's club will remain the Steaua that they played for?
Yeah. Hagi is very upset because of this. He feels that it shouldn't have happened. He feels that a deal should have been reached before and all these crazy legal fights took place. The 1986 winners are also divided. Most of them are behind the Army's team. Only Duke Adam, the hero, the shootout hero from the final against Barcelona, is back in Becali's club. He thinks that this is Steaua. The younger players are sticking with this Becali's club, while the older ones, the ones who have a relationship with the glory days when the Army was in power in the communist era, are trying to get behind the Army club.
Can I ask you one question from a listener as well? Dr. Hantastic wants to know, will Gigi ever let go of the club he has now? And could the sort of current Steaua ever be stable again with someone like him calling the shots? What are your thoughts on that?
Even when he was in jail, even after coming out and when things weren't that good for him, people were questioning him regarding the future of the club. He said he will never, never, ever let go and that Steaua will remain his. Concerning the stability question, hard to predict, because I wouldn't say that this club is not stable at the moment. I think it's one of the few stable clubs in Romanian football because it pays salaries. So if a club pays salaries in time, pays money for transfers, I would say it's a good and stable club. The standards aren't very high regarding professional football here because money doesn't come as easy as it did 5-10 years ago. I think that only a deal between him and the Ministry of Defense could bring normality back.
Emmanuel, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And I'll send you a message later and I'll get editing that. But that was great. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me.
For more, head to the website, footballineurope.co.uk.
And a big thanks to Emmanuel for joining us on the show from Bucharest. Chris Parrott is with me, of course. Chris, should we talk about the Bundesliga next?
Yeah, let's. I love it when there's these weekends when you get two or three monumental games across Europe, and we've mentioned the Madrid derby, so Der Klassiker, Rob, and poor old Dortmund were beaten at Bayern.
Very comprehensive from Bayern, 4-1 winners against Borussia Dortmund. Dortmund well out of the title race anyway, but there certainly was a question of pride at stake for Dortmund. Bayern playing without Manuel Neuer injured, Thomas Müller injured, Mats Hummels on the bench, and he has an ankle concern at the moment, and it was just very, very easy for Bayern. Scored early through Ribéry. Lewandowski scored a free kick when Dembélé ducked in the wall. It was really poor from him. Rafa Guerrero scored the goal of the game, an absolute stunner from the edge of the penalty area to make it 2-1 before Robin scored in exactly the same way as he does every single time. and then Lewandowski won and scored a penalty. And I was thinking about this. I think it was worrying for Dortmund, who did beat Bayern earlier on in the season. It's worth remembering at Signal Iduna Park. But you look at the recruitment Dortmund made in the summer, and you can't argue with young talent, especially Ousmane Dembélé. But I wonder about Dortmund's ability to sign players at their peak, say mid-20s, who are at the level required. The players in that sort of bracket they did sign were Sebastian Roeder, who was back up at Bayern, a midfielder who doesn't really play. They signed André Schürrle, who had a good final 6 months at Wolfsburg, but ultimately had been a failure, I think it would be fair to say there. And then Mario Götze, who, granted, is ill at the moment. He has an issue at the minute and can't play. But that re-signing hasn't worked at all, given how much money they spent on him. And I wonder, can Dortmund, while they can attract the top young talent, Alexander Isak, for example, the young Swedish striker, Emre Mor, the Turkish player who I think has a bit of an attitude problem, can they, and they, Mahmoud Dahoud is going, of course, but can they sign peak players at the right age? I'm not quite sure who are good enough to challenge Bayern for the title.
Carlo Ancelotti, then. I mean, I think we spoke about this a lot, but how does he do it? Every season it gets to April, May, and his teams seem to hit top form just at the right time. You mentioned how many players they work without for Der Klassiker.
Yeah, and it's notable because there are parallels, I think it'd be fair to say, between Jupp Heynckes' Bayern that certainly peaked in the second half of that season, in his final season, to win not just the title but the Champions League as well, after Dortmund had been the champions in Germany the year before. Bayern weren't that great in the first half of the season, but stayed top with RB Leipzig challenging. He's getting the best out of players like Arjen Robben. Franck Ribéry probably would be in his strongest 11 ahead of Douglas Costa, despite the fact he's only scored 4 goals this season. And Bayern, given the nature of their Champions League performances as well, might well fancy themselves to get another notable double. They are in the German Cup semi-finals as well against Dortmund. They play later on this month.
Let's go elsewhere, Rob. You had a Bundesliga double at the weekend, so you commentated on Bremen and also on Hamburg.
Yeah, so Bremen have shot up the league table with 6 wins in 7 games, a better run than Bayern, Dortmund, RB Leipzig, anyone in the Bundesliga. They were held at Frankfurt on Friday after going 2-0 up in that game. But Alex Nouri has got them to near the European places. And had they won at Frankfurt, had they held on to that 2-0 lead, even without the injured Serge Gnabry, they would have gone up to 7th. And 55 days ago, they were 16th. I mean, Alex Nouri's masterminded an incredible turnaround. And Bremen's North German rivals, Hamburg, those two sides meet in the Nord Derby next weekend. Hamburg got a 2-1 win against Hoffenheim, who suffered their 3rd defeat of the season and their 3rd since the winter break. Hoffenheim will almost certainly be a Champions League team next season, at least top 4, hoping for top 3, but they weren't that good against Hamburg on Saturday, who, thanks to Aaron Hunt, a player who the English FA famously courted once upon a time to play for the national team. He only got a couple of caps for Germany in the end. He scored twice, and Hamburg, they might just survive again. I mean, it's remarkable. Every single year, they just about get by the skin of their teeth, but it looks like it's going to happen again, Chris.
I was going to say that they're like Sunderland, but Sunderland aren't going to survive this season, so... my word, they were bad on Sunday.
Yeah, you commentated on Man United Sunderland, didn't you, on Sunday?
Oh, yeah. I mean, watching Ibrahimovic is such a joy, but Sunderland are just... They look devoid of any sort of a plan, of any sort of passion, and it's such a shame when they get 46,000, they average over 40,000 a week, and those fans have had nothing to cheer about. They haven't won since December. But anyway, poor old Sunderland. You mentioned that Hoffenheim are going to be in the Champions League. It looks like RB Leipzig are as well. They need 4 points with 6 games to go to mathematically sew that up, which is incredible. Archie Rintut, great friend of the show, also noting that Freiburg are up to 5th, Rob. Both those teams promoted last season and both could be in Europe next season.
Yeah, incredible. I mean, very different clubs in essence, like RB Leipzig, that new wave of German clubs that I'd suppose he might include Hoffenheim in, who have had vast sums of money invested in them and doing well. And Freiburg on a modest, very modest budget. I don't know where their budget would rank in the Bundesliga, but it would be very, very low. And they're up to 5th, and that's a testament to the brilliant recruitment that that club has done, and the job of head coach Christian Stoic, who brings through, having been in charge of the academy before, brings in brilliant youth players like Maximilian Philipp, and they just keep on getting results.
How often do you, that word recruitment, that is the absolute key, isn't it? And finally, the Rhine Derby, I always like this one, two clubs that don't think very much of each other. Gladbach, though, winning away in Cologne, and given the way that Köln have played this season, that was quite the result.
Yeah, dramatic victory. They won 3-2. It is a huge derby in Germany. Lars Stindl, who's been excellent in the second half of the season, especially got the winner. And Gladbach, you know, only Bayern, I think, since the restart, have more points than Gladbach since Dieter Hecking took charge of a team you saw, obviously, Chris, during the winter break when we were both in Spain covering German teams in friendlies. So a disappointing result for Köln, but they did announce that Timo Horn, the goalkeeper, has a new contract to 2022, linked very heavily with Liverpool. As we know, a new contract does not mean you're staying. It perhaps purely means that the club's going to make more money when they eventually do sell you. But one player who Cologne will be desperately trying to keep this summer, Chris, is Anthony Modeste, who scored again at the weekend. He's the third top scorer in the Bundesliga behind Aubameyang and Lewandowski. There's a rap song that's been released about just about Anthony Modeste. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, I'll hear it.
Okay, so that song's it's French rappers, and they're basically saying stay modest, like Modeste. There's been a rap song about Aubameyang previously. How do you feel about this, Chris? Do you like that? Would you download that on your Spotify?
What Spotify? Yeah, probably not.
Really?
I don't mind the principle. I love a good sing song, and particularly about a football player. But what did you say? Stay modest, like Tony. I mean, how long did that come? come on. Or what should we do? He's called Modeste. We could say, stay modest, like Tony. Is he particularly modest? I don't know.
Well, judging by the standard of his sports car in his driveway in the music video, I think no.
Absolutely. What do you think? It's an ironic song.
I don't know, because I don't think Modeste would have done it. He's in the video. He's on the pitch in Cologne. They're dancing around. I'll tweet out the video so people can see it.
I don't like it then anymore. If the principle is stay modest, and in the video he's not being modest, unless the joke's on everyone. No, hang on. Here we go. I'll only like it if it could catch on as a chant within the stadium. If it can, great. If not,
it definitely can't, because there's auto-tuning in it. You can't auto-tune 50,000 people. Let's go from a player who probably should get a French call-up at some point to the French league, Ligue 1, Chris. Mario Balotelli scored twice as Nice came back from 1-0 down at Lille to win by 2-1. People may have seen Mario Balotelli's brilliant knee slide through airport security at the weekend. We'll put that on our Twitter as well. Paris Saint-Germain got a 4-0 win over Gancomp, Cavani with two. But Monaco stay three clear after a 1-0 win at Angers. Falcao scored the only goal of that game. And we did actually have a tweet in from Faju, who said a brilliant series of saves from Angers goalkeeper Letellier certainly deserves a mention on the podcast. Couldn't do enough to deny Monaco all 3 points. So despite the fact they just lost the league, the French League Cup final, Chris, to Paris Saint-Germain, Monaco stay clear. As we head into the final weeks of the season, you wonder whether the Champions League challenge and the league challenge will take its toll on Monaco.
Yeah, I wonder whether it might at the weekend, but it didn't. It was a narrow win at the newly named Raymond Kopa Arena in Angers, which was the club where he made his professional debut and sadly passed away earlier this year. The Reims and Real Madrid great, one of the greats of the early European Cup years. They still won, didn't they? And they still keep going, Monaco. I'm fascinated to see what happens with them. It's back-to-back Champions League now, remember. So you have the first leg and then you have the second leg 6 or 8 days later, dependent on the Tuesday or the Wednesday. So I think the next couple of weeks will prove whether Monaco can deal with those games. I hope they can. I mean, a bit like Paris Saint-Germain, the standard of French football all the way throughout the league isn't as strong. So it's not like in England where you might come up against, you know, a Swansea or a West Ham and be really, you know, that's a really difficult game. Compared to Angers, you probably can just about coast through it. But interesting as well, Rob, they didn't play on Friday night, Monaco, which we've seen this in France before to help their clubs out. They often put their Champions League teams on the Friday, but I don't know why, but it means they haven't had as much rest as they might have been able to.
Yeah, we'll get on to the Champions League and Europa League very shortly as well. Lyon, still Europa League contenders, scoring so many goals at the moment, especially Alexander Lacazette, who's second only to Cavani on 24 compared to Cavani's 29 in the goal-scoring standings. In the Eredivisie, loads of goals there. Chris, free scoring at the moment.
It was mad. Shall I go through the Saturday results? There were four games, OK? They finished 4-2, 4-3, 5-1 and 4-1. Mad. Including in that Ajax were one of the teams that were heavy winners, 5-1 winners. They're 1 point behind Feyenoord now because they were held on Sunday. But that's an obscene amount of goals for one day in the Eredivisie on Saturday.
Certainly is indeed. Chris, I'll tell you about Portugal next. Benfica and Porto both won this weekend. Of course, they recently played each other and drew 1-1 at the start of the month. Benfica topped by 1 point with 6 games to go. Do you want to give us the latest from Turkey as well? Who looks like they're going to win the league there?
Well, Beşiktaş do again. The reigning champions still in Europe as well. They play Lyon. We'll talk about that in a moment. That could be a really, really entertaining tie in the quarterfinals. They had a rather bonkers game in Trabzon on the Black Sea coast. They won 4-3 away. Hutchinson with a 91st minute winner. They were 3-2 down. Hugo Rodriguez was one of the scorers. Remember him for Trabzonspor? And Abubakar, one of those to score for Beşiktaş. So a 4-3 win. It looked like an absolute classic. The stands were bouncing throughout the whole game, and Beşiktaş coming through that game to win. And there's a big, well, it's nowhere near a big Istanbul derby, but this new side, Istanbul BB, who have really come from nowhere, host Galatasaray tonight. That's a fairly big game. But Beşiktaş look in pole position. It's a bit of a golden period for that club. Looks like it's going to be back-to-back titles.
Very interesting indeed. Tommy C tweeting to say the topsy-turvy game at Beşiktaş was one of his highlights of the weekend. OK, Chris, Champions League this week. Dortmund-Monaco on Tuesday, Juventus-Barcelona on Tuesday as well. Dortmund again have injury problems. Marco Reus is back training. We're not sure if he is going to play. Weigl, Kagawa, Piszczek, all hopeful to be back and able to play against Monaco. Gonzalo Castro is a doubt. These are two free-scoring teams, I think it would be fair to say.
Yeah, and I can't see why either would try and sit back. More than 200 goals between them this season in all competitions. We saw the way Monaco played in the away leg at Manchester City, scored 3, conceded 5. I think Dortmund have to win that game, and therefore I don't think they can afford to sit back. I think if Dortmund don't win at home, they won't go to Monaco and beat them there. It's such a good tie. I'm really pleased that one of those two clubs is going to be in the semi-finals. I think had they drawn, say, Juventus and Barcelona, I think both would have been knocked out. But in terms of two young teams, vibrant sides, yes, it's annoying one of them will be knocked out, but it does ensure that one of them will be in the semi-finals of the competition. I think it's going to be two fantastic matches of football.
I think Monaco just will have more maturity and maybe see out that tie. Juve, Barcelona, two teams we've already talked about a lot already. On Wednesday, Bayern Madrid, Mats Hummels and Pepe out for that game. One of those giants of European football will be eliminated. Carlo Ancelotti, of course, a Champions League winner while Real Madrid coach. Atletico Leicester, Chris. So Atletico got that draw at Real Madrid at the weekend. Leicester were beaten by Everton. Do Leicester have any chance, you think, over two legs against such an experienced Champions League team?
I said that they would be knocked out by Sevilla. So I'm going to say no again, but they somehow managed to beat Sevilla, didn't they? Who my only caveat for that was I think Sevilla were the masters of their own downfall again. We've mentioned this, but it's happened twice in big games in the Champions League. They wound themselves up instead of the opposition. Atletico are far more savvy than that. They're far more experienced. There's a reason they've reached two Champions League finals in the last three seasons. Again, from Leicester's point of view, they have to ensure they're still in the tie after the first leg in the Calderon. That will be difficult. I think Atletico will come through. I hope that the second leg is still set up and that Leicester still have a chance to go through. I've got, just to come back to Dortmund, Rob, I'm going to ask you a question. How many different Dortmund goal scorers do you think they've had in this season's Champions League?
I guess 8.
No, 15.
They haven't even played that many matches.
I know, and an own goal, but we don't count that. But 15 different players have scored. It's going to be great. And then the Europa League, Rob, there isn't, apart from Manchester United, who... I mean, Ajax too, in terms of history. But there aren't many massive clubs. United are comfortably the biggest, but there's still some really good ties, I think.
Yeah, Ajax play Schalke. Celta Vigo take on Genk. Lyon face Besiktas. And it's Anderlecht versus Manchester United in the Thursday games. Chris, as you saw Manchester United at the weekend, I mean, is this a better chance of them getting into the Champions League than, say, via the Premier League in a top four spot? Or, you know, are Anderlecht going to cause them real problems with, in particular, you know, Yuri Tielemans, a player who I think is almost at 20 goals for the season for a midfielder. Are they going to cause United problems?
I think so. I think Theo Dordrecht as well has scored a lot of goals for Anderlecht. They are top in Belgium. Amazing that we have two Belgium sides in the last eight of a European competition. That can't have happened since their heyday in the 80s, I wouldn't have thought. I think United will have enough to get through over the two legs. They are only 4 points behind Manchester City with a game in hand and with the Manchester derby to come. And that Manchester derby is going to be brilliant. Under the lights, midweek at the Etihad. I still think they can get top four in the Premier League. I think they should be considered favourites to win the Europa League. And they are comfortably the biggest side left in it. Again, from Anderlecht's point of view, they have to make the most of playing at home, I think, and try and get an advantage. That said, United have been better away from home this season than they have at home. So, because I think the way teams set up, if Anderlecht try and attack Manchester United, I think that will suit Jose Mourinho down to a T. So whether they're good enough to sit back and frustrate them, I'm not sure. That wouldn't be their natural game.
Chris, interestingly, this exact moment at the time of recording, Celta Vigo in the quarterfinals of the Europa League, they've just confirmed that Giuseppe Rossi, the striker formerly of Manchester United, Villarreal, Fiorentina, has suffered a ruptured cruciate ligament injury at the weekend match against Eibar. Yeah, so they are saying, this is what the statement says, it was an injury sustained during the match against Eibar. The player will require surgery and will be out for no less than 6 months. Football Italia reporting, of course, that this is another brutal injury for Rossi, who we all know is an exceptional striker. And he first ruptured his ACL back in 2011-12. He's now 30 years of age. He's actually on loan from Fiorentina at the moment. And only last weekend scored a hat-trick against Las Palmas. He's had so many injuries, Chris, since that first ACL injury. You can't help but wonder, you know, how much more can he put his body through?
That's one of those when you see it. And whenever you see a player getting that injury, your heart sinks. But for it to be Rossi, given all he has had to overcome, and as you mentioned, just look back to, you know, being an extremely good striker, which he is, and that's a huge blow for the player, and as you mentioned, given how old he is, and also from Celta's point of view too, you know it wouldn't have been great for Rossi to have played in a European quarter final against Genk, who are a side they would, you know, hope to
certainly
beat.
Yeah.
That's a huge blow for him, and you can only hope he can come back again.
Okay, that's all we have time for on Football in Europe. We'll be back next Monday. Chris, I'm seeing you for the Champions League this week, am I?
We are. Should we put our heads on the block? and say who's going to go through in each of the ties, Rob. I'll start with you. Dortmund, Monaco.
Monaco. Okay, so I'll just go. Okay. I'll go. I think Monaco are going through. I think Juventus are going through. Atletico are going through. And Bayern are going through. How about that?
Oh, we agree. I think exactly the same.
Do we? Monaco, Juve, we both think Barca are going out, do we? Atletico and Bayern.
So we both think that Barca and Real Madrid are going out. I personally do.
Yeah. Okay, and Europa League, I'll go Schalke. I'll still go Celta Vigo. I'll go Lyon and I'll go Manchester United. Is that what you're going for?
No, I think Besiktas will beat Lyon over two legs.
All right. God, we think the same, don't we, Chris? Great minds.
Oh, we do. And there's nothing quite like on-air production as well, Rob, so I think we did that well.
Okay, thanks to everyone for listening. Please leave us a review on iTunes. Tweet us at FIE Podcast. We'll be back next Monday.
This is Football in Europe.